Good morning, Eric.
What's up, Eric?
Good morning.
Hey, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I know I watched the game Wednesday night, and what a good win, and you obviously getting Ja Morant back. It just seems like this team's on a bit of an uptick right now.
Well, they play so much better with him in the lineup because it's not just having him, and he's got so much potential and is really showing the entire NBA fan base around the world why he was the number two selection. Some people say it could have been number one, but it just adds to your depth as well. The back spasms gave an opportunity for D'Anthony Melton, who's in that guard rotation as well, to get some extra minutes, and he's playing really well. And they were excited to get him from Phoenix in the offseason in a trade. So he just has a command of the game. And so as he comes back, you see everybody else get better around him. Dylan Brooks is finding openings and not having to create his own shot. Jaren Jackson Jr. the same way. And the two games he came back on that road trip, they're just a better team. And, I mean, I hate to say it so captain obviously, but they're a better team when he's on the floor. You can see it in so many other aspects just of the fact that he's so exciting to watch.
Yeah, what does it mean for the fan base to have a superstar like Ja Morant, with the Grizzlies? You know, you guys had Gasol all those years and Mike Conley Jr. and, of course, you know, Big Z. This is a guy, obviously, you know, the fan base really identifies with that team, I know, in Memphis. What does it mean for the fan base to have a potential superstar like Ja Morant in their city playing for their team?
Yeah, it's going to be huge. You know, that's a conversation we had a bunch on this last trip. He's right now second in the NBA in fourth quarter scoring, which is remarkable because he's right there with Kawhi Leonard. He was tied for second. They're either right there or one's a slight edge ahead of the other, and James Harden's leading the league. And that shows his willingness to take the big moment and be a part of that and lead at the right time. So Mike Conley was terrific in his tenure here. Marc Gasol was fantastic. Zach Randolph is, you know, in a lot of people's minds, the best Grizzly to play in Memphis overall. And then you had Tony Allen, who was just a fan favorite with how hard he played and the things he did that kind of brought it all together. But this is different. This is a guy that we're gonna be going to arenas for the next handful of years, and there's going to be a lot of people in those buildings with his jersey on. He's remarkably humble about the fact that he knows he can still get better. He's a tireless worker. And I think that stems from the fact that his entire basketball playing life, he's kind of been overlooked. You know, the story has gone around about how he ended up at Murray State, how he was in a secondary gym at a camp, and one of the Murray State assistants was there to actually look at another kid and called the head coach and said, "Hey, I'm offering this kid now." And the head coach said, "Do it." And he ends up 2 years later being the number two pick. And even then, after his freshman year, at some summer camps, and he wasn't getting the recognition a lot of people thought that he should. And you know, he formed a relationship with a former Grizzly and Chandler Parsons, who I think was running a camp and was there and said, "Hey, you got to get this kid involved more. He's a potential top five pick," a lot of people say. So that kind of, I wouldn't say slight, but that lack of, you know, you weren't a prodigy, you had to work for it, that stuck with him. I mean, he's working night in, night out. His jump shot right now from the time we first saw him in training camp is light years better. And that's the one thing I always tell people, you can always get better at a jumper. You can't teach a guy to be able to dunk on a 7-footer the way he can. But you can teach
that was ridiculous, by the way, the other day. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yikes.
Yeah, I'm pretty fortunate that I had some reserve at that point because I about broke.
You could have broke some FCC laws, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and we discussed it after, and I said, I got on the bus going back to the hotel because we stayed over, and I looked at my boss, I shook my hand, and he goes, "What's wrong?" I said, "This kid's going to cost me money. I'm getting fined." I just want it on record that I'm not getting fired if I say it. You know, there's a few four-letter bombs that go he does things. The crazy thing was, guys, you know, and I don't think I'm prophetic in this because I think anybody that had watched some of the early games he played in, I had said on a radio show in Memphis, I said, he's going to get somebody. and I said it before the Golden State game, I said, he's going to get somebody on a dunk, and people are going to realize just how athletic this guy is. Now, in the Golden State game, where he got a guy was on a dribble move that, you know, arguably could have been called a carry, but he froze a guy in Golden State, and I was just like, what are we watching? Mm-hmm. Like, the ball is just, like, he just handles it like very few can. And I heard Kendrick Perkins on a local show here yesterday, and Perkins played 13 years in the NBA and is now getting into the media thing, and he said, you've got a guy, and I thought it was an interesting description, you've got the athleticism of Russell Westbrook, you've got the ball handling of Kyrie Irving and the passing of Rajon Rondo, and he said, who wouldn't want that guy on your roster? And then you factor that he's 20 years of age, and the story I related to somebody was, we saw one of my good friends on the traveling teams, Rob Fisher, our TV sideline reporter, and we were sitting at the hotel and in the lobby, and the hotel restaurant had just kind of made last call. We get back a little bit late for food, and I said, well, hey, why don't you guys go down here? And we looked at each other and I said, can they get in there? Because if it's 21 and over, they can't. Our two best players are 20 years of age. And I'm like, they can't even go like late night to a restaurant if it's 21 and over. And that bodes well. That bodes well. So there's going to be some bumps along the way. But having a guy like Ja getting that pick was massive for the city and the fan base, because the Memphis Tigers are going to be really good this year. Penny Hardaway's got an incredible recruiting class. Obviously, there's a few things that have happened that have bumped in the road for that. But they're still going to be a tournament team. And if you would have gone into this year, and let's just say they had to convey their pick to Boston, which they very nearly did, where would your hope be? What would you be thinking right now going, what are we going to do? So now, instead, you've got a kid that everybody wants to clamor to see. Unfortunately, he's not going to play tonight. I understand why they're doing these things. I would have thought if you weren't going to play him in one of the two games, my decision would have been don't play him Saturday. But I think they just felt like, let's get him a night now and not risk any further damage. The back thing was just such a freak accident where he fell into a cameraman. But the buzz is about the city and it's about the NBA world, and I don't think it's going to stop anytime soon.
Eric Hasseltine, voice of the Grizzlies. You mentioned his fellow 20-year-old, Jaren Jackson Jr. How cool is it going to be that here you are? I mean, he's 6'11", and he comes out of the Michigan State, obviously that high-profile program. But I tell you, you've got two young men who are 20 years old that can grow together.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Jaren should probably be a rookie this year. He was a young rookie last year at 19, just having turned 19, which meant he was 18 as a freshman in college, and Ja's similar to that. I think he said it best. He came on our broadcast after the win in Golden State, and he was obviously excited. He said, I got my guy back. I got my point guard back. And that's not meant as a slight to our backups, Tyus Jones and DeAnthony Melton, but these two guys have formed a camaraderie and a bond. And, Jaren was that prodigy. Jaren was that guy that from a young age you knew he had the potential to be special. Ja was not. But Jaren's father didn't let him just rest on that, because he made a 13-year NBA career out of being undrafted and taught him that, hey, you can stick in this league if you can shoot. And so Jaren at 6'11", I believe if you really measure him, he's probably 7 feet tall. They're going through this wave in the NBA where people have been kind of fudging the numbers of heights and weights for years, and it's hilarious to me to go through my game charts and you don't see a team and all of a sudden the guy's 2 inches shorter than he was a year ago, or an inch taller, or 10 pounds lighter, or 15 pounds heavier, and you're just like, okay, whatever, they're just being more stringent on the exact numbers. But I think Jaren's close, if not 7 feet, he's awfully close, and he's figuring it out as well. In the game against Phoenix, first couple of plays, he kind of just was off stride, and then he figured out where he could go, and he's starting to realize he can square guys up from about 15, 20 feet out, and with his strides, and for a guy his size, his ability to handle the basketball, it's two strides and he's at the rim. There's not a lot of guys that can gonna block his shot, and where he gives defenders fits is he shoots from the outside right-handed, but you get him within 5-10 feet of the basket, a lot of times he finishes left-handed. And now you've got defenders guessing, where is he going to go? He loves to go to his left, but he can clearly go to his right. And so if you guess wrong, you're in big trouble because he's not going to miss when he gets that close.
Eric, what are the realistic goals this year for the Memphis Grizzlies? I mean, we know the West is so loaded, the two L.A. teams. You know, Utah's, you know, projected to be really good. We all know how loaded the Western Conference is. Is it realistic to expect the Grizzlies to try to scrap for a 7 or 8 seed? How do you see it?
No, I don't think that's in the cards. And, yeah. And I'm going to sound like the company pitch man. Hey, they're paying the bills, so I'm not gonna shy away from it. I've said from day one the realistic goal is obviously, in my opinion, to get the bond between those two guys we've been talking about, to get Brandon Clark minutes, who's been very good when he's been out there and really has shown that the Grizzlies, I think, got a steal in the pick in the 20s where they grabbed the young man out of Gonzaga. Find out who works well with one another, and maybe if you have a guy that isn't exactly cohesive with what you have the flexibility to move somebody and try to bring somebody else in. Simple fact of the matter is, you have a team that, if you go back to look at the 2018 training camp roster as compared to this year's 2019 training camp roster, there's only two guys left, and that's Jaren Jackson and Dylan Brooks, and you're not going to win in this league at a high level with a very young roster, would be the youngest roster if it weren't for the Andre Iguodala situation. And that now, with the ability to make trades of guys you've signed coming up in the NBA, you have to wait until mid-December. That's probably going to be something that gets explored. And if Andre Iguodala is moved sometime in the near future, you're going to have, if not the youngest, probably the second youngest roster. Those teams just don't win 50 games. You've got to learn, and they're figuring things out. So I think the realistic goal was to get the bond between those guys and for those guys to develop and take some lumps, and, you know, but also develop an exciting style of play. And that's what Taylor Jenkins, the new head coach, has done. He's high volume 3-point shooting, ball movement, high volume assists. Let's play fast. Let's, you know, try to start it with our defense. But, you know, when you're 20 years old, defending guys that are 27, 28, that have been in the league 6-7 years and are really good, you're gonna have some nights where you don't get that job done. And so I don't think anybody in Memphis believes that they were going to make the playoffs. What I've said is, look at it in stages. Where they are right now on December 13th, they look much better than they did when we open the season. Where they're going to be come, you know, February 1st, right before the All-Star game, they're going to look better than now. And then I would be shocked, guys, if they stay healthy and you watch this team late March and into early April, they're going to beat some teams that are thinking, okay, we need a win. We're in the playoff picture. We need a win. Everybody, you know, if you lose one in Memphis, that's dropping one to the field. We know they're a good young team, but they're not there yet. We need this, and they're going to get them. And they're going to go out, and they're going to beat somebody, and they're going to beat them, and they're going to look at that loss and go, that could have hurt us. And they're going to upset some teams. They're going to play a little bit of a spoiler role. And in truth, and I'm not a big believer in not playing to win. I don't know that any NBA player is. I think some front offices will manipulate the roster to try to rebuild, and I get that. But you're never going to convince me that an NBA player or coach has ever sat in a locker room and go, hey, guys, let's go lose tonight. They're just not built like that. But in truth, the best thing for this team would probably be to have an opportunity to keep the pick. If it's in the top six, it's theirs. Get another young piece in what a lot of people deem to be a very deep draft with the players that are showing in their freshman and sophomore years this year in college basketball that there's going to be some guys that can help. And then you could turn a corner very quickly, a lot like the Oklahoma City Thunder once did when they had Kevin Durant. They had Jeff Green at the time, who hadn't had the heart issue yet. Then they drafted Russell Westbrook, and they kept their pick, or they had it, and they got James Harden. And they went from a 28-29 win team to a 50-win team because it clicked. They also added Serge Ibaka. but they had that flexibility to move. They had moved off Ray Allen's contract, and Wally Szczerbiak was with them at the time, and they moved off that contract. So that's kind of where this team is. They're going to have about $55 million in cap room. Doesn't mean you have to spend it. And the Denver Nuggets are where they're at right now because the year everybody had a Brinks truck backed up to their house, and you were seeing guys like Timofey Mozgov and Luol Deng and Bismack Biyombo get four-year, $72 million contracts, and you're looking around going, what world do I live in right now? The Denver Nuggets, when they didn't get their guys, sat back. And the next year, they went and got Paul Millsap because everybody else had spent their money. And they said, cool, we'll be the one team that has enough money to go after somebody next year. And that Paul Millsap addition is why a lot of people think they may be the team, along with the Clippers, that challenges what the Lakers are doing, although the way they're playing, who knows. But, you know, it's a long answer, but I think the realistic goals right now are to get these guys as far as possible this year and instill that confidence in them that they can play. And the other metaphor I use is you guys have been around the sports game probably about as long as I have, and all I tell people is look back at that 1990 Atlanta Braves pitching staff when Bobby Cox with Leo Mazzoni as his head coach or as his pitching coach let three young guys go out and take their lumps, Tom Glavine, John Smoltz, and Steve Avery. They all went about 7-17 or 8-15. And the next year they went worse to first because all of a sudden those kids, after taking their behind kickings for a year, knew how to get guys out the next year. And they had guys that could hit behind them. So I think that's what you're going to see. I'm not saying there'll be a playoff team next year. That's not really the way the NBA goes right now. It's a star-based league, and you've got teams that are just loaded in the West, like you said, and some young up-and-coming teams. Sacramento's good.
Yep.
Denver's good. Phoenix is good. But they're going to get there sooner than later.
Eric, always a pleasure. Love having you. I've told you this many, many times. We love having the Grizzlies on here in Nashville. We really appreciate it. And they're going to be fun to watch. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys having us, and love the support from Nashville as well. They are going to be fun to watch. Love to see some of you guys down there.
All right. For sure. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it.